I'd like to talk tonight about the dropping of delusion. One of the many insights that come as life is lived is that there's always just what is happening. Before the mind interprets, judges, compares, evaluates, reacts, there's always just what's happening. If we could remember what it was like when we were very young, before we had conceptual representations for life, that was how we were experiencing things, just as they were, or just as they are. Childlike, ancient, timeless, and wondrous. We glimpsed this. And all too easily forgot it once we were conditioned, taught to think about things, to evaluate things, to judge things, to react to things. Now, I'm suggesting that we were taught this. And I'm using the word taught in a specific way. I don't mean that it just happened through connection or relationship with other people, although that was part of it. It also happened as an expression of the teaching of ignorance. Ignorance is a teaching. There's always just what is happening. No moment is exempt from that truth. It's very simple. It's very ordinary. It's very direct, spontaneous. And when realized, it's clear that what's happening is liberating itself. Now, what does that mean? What's happening is liberating itself unto itself. Liberating itself means that everything that's happening is being itself already. And you could even add to that that if judging, comparing, evaluating, reacting is happening, then it's part of just what's happening too. There's no outside of this that I'm describing right now. All is included. You can think about it if you want to. And there's a certain realization that happens there. Yes, that makes sense. There's just what's happening as it is all the time. It's true for all things, everything, all experiences. However, just thinking about it, and perhaps the sense that it makes sense, what does that do? Just like thinking about anything as interesting, fun, exciting, wonderful, or anything else, What does that do? It simply means the mind is thinking about it. If that is all life is really about, then why sit all day and watch your breath and feel what comes up, which just one day, no matter how many years you've been meditating, just one day, so much comes up. Why bother with all that if one could just think about this truth that I'm describing? And that would provide the path realization. Part of the answer to this question that I'm bringing out right now is that our whole problem with any moment, remember, is just what's happening. But our problem with just what's happening is that we don't see things clearly. We're not seeing there's just what's happening. We don't see that the seeing, is not wired back into anyone that's solid and separate. And our minds and all of its patterns, because of various reasons, including, you could say, genetic predispositions, unresolved traumas, impressions that hold power and sway, that are unresolved, unfinished business, neurological, hormonal imbalances, aggregated, accumulated as the force of samsara. And what's the force of samsara? Aptly put, perpetual wandering. Look for a moment at what the mind is doing much of the time. It's perpetually wandering. It doesn't even know where it's going. It might be working on figuring something out, and in conventional living, it can pull it off. Even during a retreat, one can figure out a problem to something and put it into service or application when one ends, like, yes, I'll do this now. And you make an adjustment. And things might improve to an extent. That's not what we're here for. This isn't about problem solving of that nature. This wheel of samsara, this wheel of perpetual wandering, until the light of Dharma, or the light of truth, touches that wheel, illuminates that wheel just keeps spinning. And again, watch the view that can arise, if it ever does, that there's something wrong with perpetual wandering, or a wheel that just keeps spinning. Sometimes the mind does say, you know, that's not okay, what's happening? This is not okay, it's not acceptable, I don't like it. Of course, that's a magnification, a further kind of spinning into a deeper sort of problem, isn't it? So our whole problem with any moment, with life or with ourselves, is that we're not seeing things clearly. This is what Vipassana insight is to see things clearly. That's what it means. Now this force of samsara, this wheel of perpetual wandering, is fueled by something. It's not just a random thing. It's not just haphazard. It's not something that can't be penetrated and discovered and seen through. Because if that's the case, then what are we doing here? This perpetual wandering is fueled fundamentally by the tendency to ignore. Not ignorance meaning you're stupid, although at times it's very humbling to realize you're capable of it. You don't need somebody else to tell you. That was really stupid. You can really assess your own moment and go, that was stupid. And it's a wonderful, wonderful release into stupidity. The liberation of stupidity. Okay? This is not the ignorance that I'm talking about. The ignorance that I'm talking about is the tendency to ignore what is true. And that's where we're going to go in this talk, if we can, is we're going to go straight into that. The tendency to ignore what is true makes us vulnerable to not seeing things as they actually are, and rather instead seeing things through the lens of delusion. So ignorance proliferates, in this case right now, as delusion. What is delusion? Listen carefully, we'll repeat this, because it's key to this talk. Delusion, a false conviction held contrary to invalidating facts. A false conviction, you know how conviction works? Yes, that's it. A false conviction held contrary to invalidating facts. That means facts that would invalidate it. The facts cannot invalidate the delusion unless the facts are revealed. The facts will straighten things out. Isn't that what law was supposed to be about? Let's get to the facts. And we'll straighten it out. The case will be solved when we get to the facts. God, I mean, just look at this webbing of interconnected nodes of consciousness that we're sharing with the multiplicity of humanity. And you listen to it, you relate to it, and at times you wonder, where are the facts? Where are the facts? Who's telling the truth? I'm very at risk of getting political, but I won't. Always try not to. The facts have to be brought to light. This is the teaching. This is the medicine. This is the antidote to what ails us. And the facts at times seem to be quite obscured, quite hidden, maybe unavailable, clouded, covered over. It's not just a layer of delusion, it could be layers and layers and layers and layers. Consider this. We all know what it's like at times to experience being lost geographically. Now, some people, when they get lost geographically, they're on 8th Street and they really need it to be on Queen Street. And nine the twain shall meet in their mind. Okay? And there's no one to ask and there's no map. Now, some people just go, I'm lost. What else is going on? Anything to eat? Wow, I'll lie down, I'll take a nap. This is probably a bit rare. Many people start looking for the solution. What am I going to do? Maybe I should retrace my steps. I have a friend that loses his wallet with great regularity. And what he typically does, if there's others around, is he incorporates them into the search to find it. So what happens in his house, if this goes on, it happens in his house, it doesn't just happen at work and these other places, there'll be four or five people that he'll get to help him look for this. And they'll be looking and looking and looking. And finally somebody will go, I found it! And then on they go to the next thing. Okay, that's one of his methods I've discovered. You might want to think about that as something you could take home after this retreat. If you happen to have that particular condition, that's all it is, of losing your wallet. Wouldn't it be funny and ultimately entertaining to realize that we've lost ourselves? We lost ourselves somewhere along the way. We still got a part. We got a fragment. We got a piece. But I want to be whole, the person says. I want to be whole. I want to be complete. I want to not be fragmented. I want to be integrated. How do you do that? When problems, issues, events, situations, and ultimately states of body-mind arise, they can be considered what's happening. Notice the progression there. Problems, issues, events, situations, and finally we have states of body-mind. So for some people, when they sit down to meditate, they have a sense of there are problems here. And a little bit of, you know, meditation goes on, and some breathing goes on, and a couple of meals goes on. And what was the problem seems to be now kind of thinned a little. It's an issue. I have an issue. This is an issue. My knee is an issue. These thoughts are an issue. They were a problem. This kind of thing was a problem before. Now it's an issue. Sit a bit longer, maybe, you know, a little more life goes on. Whether you sit or not, you know, wisdom can come. Insights can come, thank goodness, huh? You don't have to sit down and go. You know, you can actually just live, and some insights might come that problems can turn into issues. So then we can move from the issue to, now we have a situation. There's a situation unfolding here. It's an event. Actually, then in come the words, he did say, opening to life event. Oh, it's an event. Right, this is an event. It's a vipassana event. I'm having a vipassana insight event. And then eventually it's a body-mind process. Now, usually still even there, it's my body-mind process, which could bring back the whole thing at the beginning of problem again. Through the issue to the situation event, and eventually it thins out again. And you go to sleep and forget about it, and it comes back the next morning, or it doesn't. Have you ever noticed that sometimes things that seem to be problems, issues, situation events, they just kind of went away by themselves and nobody did anything about it? Like you kind of went, all of a sudden, hey, you know what, that's not here like it was. You know, I'm not scratching myself in the same way, metaphorically. You know, I've stopped digging. It's not bugging me. What happened to that? Everything is as it is Everything is liberating itself unto itself, into itself, within itself, by itself in a sense, but that by itself doesn't mean isolated from everything else, because everything else is doing that too. So this is what happens for many minds when they sit down and they look, is this process of seeing things, how? Through the lens, through the view. Right now, that's happening. There's a view organizing how everything is being perceived here. We believe at times, erroneously, that our view is the truth. That's the only thing I can see. Gotta be the truth. And in a way, it is. But then it flips. The view changes, and the problem became an issue. And the issue became a situation. And then it became a body-mind process. And then it became not even my body-mind process, just a body-mind process. And you know what? Happiness is likely to proportionally increase as the thinning of the problem occurs. Not because we're like working on trying to tune up the happiness as the problem thins, but by the nature of the thinning of delusion, inaccurate view, because it's an inaccurate view, may I say this, that anything is a problem. It's an inaccurate view that anything is actually an issue. And what makes something a situation? You do. It's a situation, and we get a little agreement that this was a situation, and it's a serious one even. That's the view. A false conviction held contrary to invalidating facts. Okay. A person has paused, stopped long enough to actually look at what is happening. They take the one seat. That's what sitting still is, the one seat. And when you find the one seat, you no longer need to have your special meditation cushion in your special spot, which I was indoctrinated into with Vipassana. In the beginning was find your spot, have it, be there, sit in that spot every day. That's good for you. Do that. And like a good doobie, I sat there in my spot. And I put a little aura of protection around it so no one else would get near it. Because the worst thing that can happen is somebody starts farting on your cushion or just sitting there. You come in and you see someone's been sitting on my cushion. That's the porridge thing, a little bit. It's a serious, right? This is a problem. It's not just an issue. Okay. I'm not going to play with this too much. Nobody will be going into your room during this weekend, hopefully. If they do, they're lost. But you'd be amazed at what people get attached to when you take away their cars and houses. All of a sudden, it's my cushion. My sock. What the heck happened to my toothpaste? I mean, it gets actually crazy for some people. They feel insane. Also, watch the tendency. How many times do you need to look at the schedule? Really, I mean, it doesn't change. It's just kind of like there, the same thing. 3 o'clock's been looked at 4 times. One of my early teachers in this Vipassana, he used to, when it would get really crazy, he would be finding himself reading the ingredients on the detergent box in the laundry room. Anything to get away from this intensity of this problem, issue, situation, event, body-mind process that I'm imprisoned in. Until I'm not. Because this isn't a prison. But it's a prison if of view of delusion is operating, if this isn't being seen clearly, there can be some problems. So the person has taken the one seat. When you take the one seat is anywhere you're sitting. It's available. Movie theaters are included. Cars, other people's houses, your house, or as one of my friends used to do, up on the roof. At the end of the day, you'd go up on the roof and sit and meditate up on the roof. And that one seat becomes the seat. It allows that person, so to speak, to not avoid, to not deny, to not complain, to not blame, and potentially to not ignore what's happening. And then something radical and spontaneous can rise. And often it arises in relation to the so-called troubling factors, the troubling conditions. And what is it that arises? It's a loving, kind, compassionate response. And if these troubling factors that can be arising are not met with this loving, compassionate, equanimous response, it's a good possibility that they'll continue to proliferate. It's like the forest fire that can even jump the road with enough wind. It jumped across the road, they said, and continued to burn. Can you feel the fire? The perpetual wandering? Can you feel it? Again, without judgment, without blame, without ignoring, without complaining. The fire. Loving, kind, accepting, compassionate response to any and all difficulties, stresses, conflicts is the most intelligent and effective response possible. And it works wonders. It works wonders. It's part of the insight into conditioning, and particularly the conditioning that, when not seen clearly, generates suffering. Generates unhappiness, isolation, loneliness, despair, and so forth. That very same conditioning need not necessarily generate that suffering when it's seen clearly. And I might add, when anything is seen clearly, please notice, how long does it last? How long does anything last when it's seen clearly? Check that out. This is part of what we've come to see in our meditations here. And this that I'm describing can get very subtle, very refined, and very deep. How compassion, how caring, accepting, equanimous response to any trouble is medicine. It's a medicinal, alchemical, biochemical mix. And even if just that is all that one penetrated, that's it, right there. Just a compassionate, caring, equanimous, accepting response into any trouble that's arising. Let's not evaluate that. Let's just consider, what's that going to do? Now, all experiences, regardless of how intense, troubling, frightening, confusing, can, will, and do transform. And it's that caring, compassionate response often that helps facilitate that. That's why when people are struggling and can't accept something in themselves and can't sort it out, sometimes they go and they be with someone who can accept that which they can't accept in themselves. And they say it. Maybe they confess it. They express it. And they receive that response. And that response then becomes something that they discover that, lo and behold, they can give it to themselves. And what begins to be clear is how transformation is totally 100% trustworthy and reliable. And as this deepens, it becomes clear this is part of how true faith is born. The insight into anicca, anicca is the Pali Buddhist word for impermanence or change. The insight into anicca, transformation, impermanence, naturally and spontaneously gives rise to a complete trust in how life really works. And as trust emerges, fear dissolves. The more fully change is penetrated and seen, the more completely the mind lets go. It's completely safe to experience total anicca, change, impermanence. It's the safest thing there is. Now, the mind sometimes is afraid of that because it's so vast, it's so total, it's so empty, and yet so full. I don't know whether I can go there. So the leg starts to just become the toe, the finger, this part starts to become fluid, loose, tingly, whereas other parts are still solid. What was solid up here before becomes fluid, loose, tingly. It starts to soften. Eventually, you know what happens? This whole thing goes poof. Particles. Because that's what it is. Dissolution. It happens every night, but we miss it because we're sleeping. Something else is dissolved, and that is the apparent witnessing. Not all the way, though, because we remember how good it feels to be dissolved. Of course, if anybody came into your room, they'd still see your body laying there. So let's not get too woo-woo. You know, it's not like it's going into all these particles, you know. Somebody would see it all spread out like that. No, it's going to look pretty much like it looks right now. Okay, but the deal is the perception is radically different. And again, perception, view, is what we're looking at here. Achincha. Fantastic. Great. Master. Vipassana meditation. He said it so well. He said, do everything with a mind that lets go. Let go a little, you have a little peace. Let go a lot, you have a lot of peace. Let go completely, and all your troubles are gone. Now let's go inside that, because you may know what he means by those words, but those can be a little tricky, because you know what? Do everything with a mind that lets go. How do you do that? How do you do everything with a mind that lets go? Well, guess what? If you're going to try to figure out what that means you're going to try to do everything with a mind that lets go. And some days it might work a little better than others. Here's the insight. What you call your mind is constantly letting go unto itself, into itself, by itself. It doesn't need you to do it in a way where it lets go. It's already letting go unto, into, within itself. That's what I said at the beginning of the talk. Everything is being itself. Everything is transforming. Everything is liberating itself unto itself. What's clear there then is that you aren't doing things with a mind that lets go. Letting go is what's happening all the time. Even as it feels like the shoulders are doing this and the head's doing that and then it's going like this, contractions taking place. The mind goes, that's not letting go, that's getting uptight, that's tightening up. No, it's all transformation. That's just a view that says letting go is like this, opening the heart is like that. It's all about expansion. That's just a piece of anicca. Anicca's going in all directions. In, out, through, over, under. Look and see. It's radical, it's immediate, and it's self-evident. At some point, we become less interested in the origins of trust, and we're rather satisfied to simply experience its function. How trust functions. And this is in fact true for all things as well. We're less interested in the origins of ignorance, the origins of happiness, the origins of love, the origins of anything, and released into how these things function, how these things are happening. And so as this mind that you don't let go of, as this mind that's letting go of itself, is seen in its nature, and I'm talking about mind as thought, emotion, planning, remembering, it becomes clear you don't need to understand anything. If you want to understand a mathematical equation, then you put your attention on it, you study it, or you have somebody teach you how to understand that, and you understand that. But in terms of what I'm talking about here, you don't need to understand anything. You don't need to know anything. Unfolding reality is enough. And I distinguish that from knowing, and I use the term wisdom. Awakening, then, is more of an unlearning than a learning. It's an emptying out. It's becoming childlike. It's becoming simple. It's perceiving extraordinariness in the ordinary. Isn't that perhaps what Jesus meant, perhaps, when he said the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed? He didn't say a big shiny palace with endless diamonds and gold and big high thises and thats. He said like a mustard seed. Tiny, ordinary, simple. Again, in that same kind of venue, the great Haku poet, master, Basho, says it this way, cherry blossoms whirl, leaves fall, and the wind flits them both along the ground. We cannot arrest with our eyes and ears what lies in such things. Were we to gain mastery over them, we would find that life of each thing has vanished without a trace. What's he pointing to? He's pointing to this absolutely trustworthy, fact of anicca, change, impermanence. There isn't anyone who gains mastery over that. You don't gain mastery over that, because what you think you are is that. It is that unfolding, transformative anicca, impermanence. That doesn't mean that's all you are. It just means what you are, relatively speaking. So then letting go is an unlearning. There's nobody who lets go. Thoughts are letting go of themselves. Breath is letting go of itself. Sensations are letting go of themselves. Sounds are letting go of themselves. What does that mean? Sounds, sensations, thoughts, all of it is being itself, unto itself, liberating itself. Just see that. And this is part of what's happening in our meditations. Whether it's being seen or not, this is what's happening. In our minds, so to speak, there appears to be a progression from 10 o'clock till 7. A progression. And one can think back over it and go, yeah, it was like this at 4, and then at 3 like that, and then the sitting was like that, and there was a progression from there to here. And we measure it with perception and thought and feeling. And this progression at times feels that it's about release, about opening up, about clarification, about easing up. And sure enough, that's how it can feel. And yet at times, you may have noted, quite beyond your control, things are getting more intense, more contracted. They don't seem to be lightening up. They seem to be darkening up. There's a darkening up going on over here. Maybe everybody else is lightening up, but I'm darkening up. This is endarkment rather than enlightenment. When it gets really strong, it only happens to me. I'm the only one in darkening. Everyone else is enlightening. It's not the case. Let me reassure you. And whether it's in darkening or it's enlightening, it seems like you're helping this happen. You're helping it happen if you have a good, healthy, compassionate, equanimous response. When I first learned Vipassana, what I heard, what I could only hear really, was that Vipassana is awareness and equanimity. Awareness and equanimity. Awareness and equanimity. You are practicing awareness and equanimity. And if you practice it enough and you practice it right, you will realize enlightenment. That's how the mind heard it. I'm not telling you that's what they said. I'm just telling you that's what was heard. I can only take responsibility for that. Have you noticed? You can't really take responsibility for what other people are saying, although you can try to call them on it. Did you really mean? And what was that? Would you say that again? Could you say that differently? I don't believe you. That doesn't make sense. Liar. And on it goes. That's not the truth. I understand. I got it. Yes, that makes sense. I hear you. I can only take responsibility for how it was interpreted. Sometimes you hear something and years chronologically pass and you hear it again totally differently. And you didn't even need to have that person say it to you. You didn't even need to read the poem again. What happened there? It seems like you're helping this transformation happen. You're responding, you're learning to respond, you're helping transformation happen. You're transforming yourself.
But here again, the question, what are the facts? What are the facts free from delusion? A false conviction held contrary to invalidating facts. The fact is that everything is changing whether there's insight into it or not. Fact, everything is transforming whether there's a compassionate response to it or not. Vipassana insight doesn't make change or transformation happen. It simply reveals what's always already happening. This right here can completely uncork pockets, conceptualizations, and patterns that you would say are unsatisfactory and stressful in your personal life. You see, because so often it's said, you must see it clearly. You must see it clearly, otherwise you can't realize the fruit. I'm telling you, it's already happening whether it's seen or not. What does that do to the somebody who's busy trying to get the transformation to happen? And at 3 o'clock sitting, I was transforming nicely. And then at the 5 o'clock sitting after dinner, the transformation slowed down. In fact, it stalled. I couldn't find the movement anymore. I became sluggish. Vipassana meditation is a learning tool. It's not an end in itself. You don't collect and hold on to insights. You actually don't collect and hold on to anything, anybody, any place, any time. That's the liberation in part. And remember Achin Cha, the more deeply the letting go, the more fully the troubles fly away. The conventional belief, very deep, agreed upon conventional belief, that you have control and choice. And again, even as it may be appearing in the meditation. For example, the breath is being observed, some sounds or thoughts come up, the attention goes off of the breathing into the sounds or the thoughts. There's an observation of the sounds and the thoughts, maybe even some awareness that the thoughts and the sounds are changing. And then there appears to be a choice to bring the attention back to the breathing. Good common example, yes? You probably didn't choose to go off to the thoughts and the sounds. It just happened. Although every now and then somebody gets interested in a sound, like, you know, a sandhill crane or something, and it's like, start listening to it. And I like that, and I'm going to listen to that more. And, oh, I wish that didn't go away. Can we have another sandhill crane over this meditation center? Or something like that. The mind gets involved in wanting to control it. Control or choice is a very deeply conditioned conviction or view. But regardless of how deep, pervasive, or true it seems, it's just a view. It's a perception. It's a way of seeing things. And you know what it's founded on? It's founded on ignorance. Look at how deeply the tendency to believe it. Choice, control will help your
life become better. Right in the center, right in the heart of the meditation, sometimes that becomes crystal clear. And you know what that is? It's clinging to existence. Ignorance doesn't just manifest as delusion. Ignorance manifests as clinging as well. The whole pile of trouble is founded on the root cause. The root cause is ignorance. The delusion that's grown from ignorance that's not seen. Because what ignorance really, you could say, needs is to be seen for what it is. It needs to be unmasked. Delusion is a filter of the mind. And it's a close partner to illusion. What's an illusion? Illusion, a mistaken perception of reality. Now, can you see that? A mistaken perception of reality, founded on ignorance, fed by delusion, how do you know when you're seeing anything clearly? One of the ways human beings often consider this is if what is being heard, felt, thought, experienced is happening in a way where there appears to be no friction. There appears to be no conflict. One then tends to think, I'm seeing this clearly because I'm not hurting. I'm not hurting, so therefore I'm seeing this clearly. Everything's going okay. I'm okay. See, I'm not hurting right now, so I'm seeing this clearly. It's starting to get tight, it's starting to get frictional, I'm not seeing this clearly. Something must be wrong here. Guess what's happening in either case? Impermanence, anicca's unfolding, miraculously, mysteriously, uncontrollably. Sounds scary? Actually, no. It's the safest thing going because it's the truth. Any teachings that are given, any teachings that are read, are only a guide. Any teacher or good friend is only a guide. Everything offered must and will be filtered through one's own process, which means awakening or true meditation is only revealed through direct personal experience. And when clear seeing arises, delusion, illusion can fall away. Every now and then a word, spoken or written, or a collection of words will penetrate. And they're not just concepts. They're not just thoughts. They actually become something more than a concept, more than a construct. They actually penetrate. They point so closely, so directly, they go right to the point. Notice if and when that might happen. The primary delusions, let's be very clear about them. Number one, not seeing that everything is changing and interdependent. Everything is interdependent with everything else. There is no separation between anything and any other thing. That means interdependence. And because of this, not seeing this truth, ignorance manifests
as the tendency to attempt to find fulfillment in that which is transitory. And yet, actually, ironically, very, very, at times comically, it becomes clear that the happiness, the fulfillment, is not in keeping things that are transitory secure and solid. It's in the opposite. It's in complete letting go. So it's truly the interdependent, changing, transitory, ephemeral nature of things when realized that brings fulfillment. You see, the delusion is, one, it's not being seen as changing. It's not being seen as interdependent. And because it's not being seen as changing and interdependent, the next delusion starts up, which is, I can find fulfillment and happiness in this. Now we can intellectually go, okay, I know I can't find happiness and fulfillment in that which changes. We can run that through our concept many times, write it down, sticky note, you know, mantra-ize that one. But still, when the S-H-I-T hits the fan, we forget. And off we go with another round of ignorance and layered of delusion. Number two, the mind can be carrying the delusion that through meditation or some activity, I will awaken and come to some fundamentally better state of being. And if I have my way, it'll happen before 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. I will, through some act of my own volition, including the possibility that I can figure out how to let go, I'm going to figure it out, I will come to some fundamentally greater or better, bigger, enlightened, less darkened state of being. Number three. The I, self view. The me view. That is working or hoping to meditate to salvation or freedom is the single greatest impediment to freedom. That's the third delusion. The idea that I am not free. I'm messed up, I'm wounded, I'm undeserving, I'm not evolved enough, I'm too distracted, I'm too contracted, I'm too afraid, I'm too neurotic, I'm too horny, lonely, I'm too something. Fill it in. This is the teaching of ignorance. It's the teaching of imprisonment, which professes that you are a separate individual with choice, and you can choose a better existence for yourself, or if you're lucky, you can meditate your way to it. This is a grand charade. It's the grandest of the grand charades. And even when someone speaks of emptiness, and all forms are empty of lasting substance and therefore incapable of bringing any lasting fulfillment, the mind will often hear this and start to run its process of trying to figure out how to attain it. I will attain the state of emptiness. I will attain the insight. And I am going to work on getting this to happen. It's very subtle. And again, all it is ignorance parading as clinging to existence. Liberation, awakening, is loss, not gain. It's the third noble truth. It's the falling away of delusion. It's the falling away of misunderstanding. It's the opposite of what the mind thinks. You're not going to attain anything. But we've been taught what to do. And we've been taught how to do it. And this is almost always rooted in achievement mentality. Achievement mentality, the game of minimizing loss and capitalizing on gain. Look how deep that view goes. It's very difficult not to co-opt it. And now it's part of the meditation. I will minimize the loss and capitalize the gain, even as I'm letting go. Facts are actually the other way around. It's seen through this delusion of gaining something. It's an openness to total loss. This opens the cage. Openness to total loss. And you know what's really interesting about that is in that openness to loss, in a strange kind of roundabout, unforeseen manner, so much is gained. You see? When you're not experiencing this clinging and this grasping born from ignorance, and you're not invested in ownership and possessing, then whatever is happening is yours. Isn't it? It's yours in not a way of ownership, you got your name on it, but it's yours in the sense of, here it is. It's seen through this delusion of gain. And the teachings of ignorance that it comes from, that releases you into your real nature. And metaphorically or imagerically, your real nature is the sky, not the clouds in the sky. That's just a metaphor. The sky is always there. Clouds passing through. The mental, emotional life and the memories, oh, the memories, are only here to be used skillfully, as is the body. Just vehicles to move about in. Nothing but temporal vehicles, present to serve in the medium of awakening. In any other activity that's wholesome and right. That's right livelihood, that's right action, that's right speech. That's the outer discipline of the Eightfold Path. We're working on the inner discipline. The right effort, right meditation, right concentration, and with some good fortune, there'll be some right understanding. That means correct view that will emerge. That's punya, that's wisdom. There may be some so-called right or skillful thoughts. Thoughts that are spontaneously born from generosity or loving or compassion. That flow through this head towards another being. Or through this head towards this or that or anything. I used to hear about these teachings of right thought, and then I tried to have some right thoughts. Actually, I realized I had a lot of wrong thoughts. That was a challenge to loosen up the judgment on the so-called wrong thinking. And then meanwhile, see if I can have a right thought. And then quite spontaneously one day, the mind just opened into these thoughts, and every thought it had was loving and caring and kind towards everything. And just brought tears to the eyes. Everywhere the eyes looked and what the ears heard and what the body touched, it was just loving thoughts. I was like, oh, that's what they meant. states of mind and body will continually appear and disappear whether meditation is taking place or not. In fact, the empirical self, that's the self that can be observed, is actually an experience of constantly changing states, constantly changing elements, constantly changing process. What you call yourself is a constantly changing process. One moment this, next moment that. We then sometimes falsely attribute, again, delusion, that there's a solid consciousness to which those states are happening. There's no solid consciousness. Consciousness is no more solid than anything else. Actually, consciousness is arising and passing like everything else. There's hearing consciousness, seeing consciousness, tasting consciousness, thinking consciousness, breathing consciousness. There's moments of consciousness arising and passing fast, rapidly, beyond our visual seeing at times, inner visual, with the objects. Consciousness is anicca too. There can be an illusion of need. The illusion of needs. Whereas in fact happiness is the release from need dependency. It's the realization you don't need anything and you don't even exist as you think you do. You don't need anything. You don't even need to eat. And you want to eat. I'm going to eat tomorrow. 3 times, I think, I'm going to eat. But you don't need to. Well, I might die. What'll die? I mean, I'm not saying let's starve tomorrow. Test this out. I'm going to eat. I don't know about you, but I'm going to eat 3 times. Because I like eating 3 times more than 2. I used to do these retreats where you can only eat twice. After 12 noon, we practice 8 precepts instead of 5. So after 12 noon, there was no solid food. You also could not sleep on a high luxurious cozy bed, which all of you have. And there was no perfume or adornments, which most of you don't have. And then there were 5 basic principles that make sense for any sane being to be living in. Don't kill, don't steal. Don't take drugs or intoxicants that cloud and delude your mind. And don't lie. And don't hurt yourself or others through sexual activity. May I pray out loud right now, just for a second, politically? May one politician tonight practice one of the precepts for the rest of his or her life. And influence others. Happiness is the release from need dependency. True happiness is the sudden and radical discovery you don't need anything. You don't need anything. There's always just what's happening. First this, then that. Never exactly the same. And what's happening is actually fulfillment itself. Not because you get it to be this way or that, not because you keep it, not because you control it, not because you choose it, but because it is as it is. Clinging falls away. Before it does, the mind continues its habitual tendencies to be disturbed by what's happening, wanting, not wanting, and being deluded about it. This is suffering, the 3 roots. Wanting, not wanting, and delusion. greed, hatred, delusion. The sage says it so well. Watch this. Before enlightenment, there was depression. After enlightenment, there is depression. The difference is after enlightenment, there's no one there to have the depression. There's somebody that I like to spend some time with who knows these things fairly well, and someone says, does the misery go away when you're enlightened? And he says, no, the misery doesn't go away. You become more miserable, but you're not there to experience it. It's greater misery, but you're not there. Suffering is a fundamental delusion born from misunderstanding, not seeing that everything is changing, and therefore being invested helplessly into or not in the view that this must change, this must go, or this must stay, and this must go, this must stay, this must change. This imposition is where the suffering is born. Liberation is the immediate radical shift into seeing that nothing needs to change. Nothing needs to change. You know what that does? That liberates everything to change. There's no need or dependency of any kind. There's no view or perception or belief or truth that needs to be found. And this realization is always already here. This is part of what it means to say there's always just what's happening. To see what's happening correctly, free from delusion and illusion. Another part is anything that is gained in life is equally possibly lost. What doesn't change is that things keep changing. Do you see that? So then, the changeless is hidden inside the change. What can't be gained or lost is that things are always happening just the way they are. It's so actually simple. It's so close. It's so close. We overlook it all the time. It would be like trying to look closer than the tip of your nose. See, most of the time we're looking. And right there, there's the samsara, there's the force of becoming. It's like looking for something. And what I'm saying to you is hidden inside what's changing is the changeless. So in order for this to come clear, delusion must drop. Funny thing is, there's nothing you can do about this. The perception of a you who is meditating can't drop delusion. And yet it can happen somehow, mysteriously, magically, at any moment, irregardless of meditation or not. And so the teachings often say, what does it mean to simply be open to that possibility? That's right effort, by the way. That's right energy. Open to that possibility. No grasping, no clinging, no resistance. Razor's edge inside the razor's edge. So subtle. Indescribably subtle. That's the potential. Awakening is the sudden and immediate seeing that everything you have taken to be true about yourself or about life is simply a perception. It's just a view. And in fact, a deluded one. Life is nothing more than a ceaseless stream of mind and matter. As this realization that there is no lasting refuge, the false idea that peace and stability can be found in objects of experience falls away. There's no peace and stability in ever-changing objects. But the insight that that's true brings such happiness and peace. That's where freedom is. Whether we know it or not, the mind's deeply conditioned out of ignorance to cling to its own existence. Continuity of existence. The liberation is in letting go. Which, if we can't let this happen in the meditation, then we get a nice chance when death is going on, physical death. And it would be nice, if we're not already kind of lined up, to be, for the last breath, huh? It's said to be pretty important. There's a lot of tradition behind it. I don't think these are people just kind of like guessing. Some true deep investigation there. Find out what dies and what doesn't. I'm saying to you, the changeless is hidden inside change. The Buddha's ultimate, penultimate teaching was the deathless. That which was never born, that which can never die. It's a teaching that is so utterly, ultimately, complete. And no description, even though he gave some rather short and terse descriptions about it, no description can be given. The best he could do was give certain kind of metaphor or analogy, just as Christ gave his teachings mostly in parables. They were really poetic verses. They were intended to stop the conceptual attempt to cling to existence. As are the koans when they work. What we're really here for, what we're really here for, is the potential of the arising of right view. And right is not versus wrong. It means correct, it means skillful, it means true. It means liberating. Or from the Buddhist terminology, it is called the noble path right view. It is the right view of the noble path. So let's take just a minute and sit together before we part for walking.